Welcome back to another episode of Books Closed. This episode is sponsored by Tattsoul. Today, we join you from sunny, scenic Oakland, California, here at Temple Tattoo with the man himself, Freddie Corbin.
Thank you, Andrew.
And this is cool.
Glad to be here.
We've gone back and forth on some different projects. Eternal Pin Tattoo School, we collaborated on.
That was awesome. I was happy to participate in that.
Yeah, roll up a little closer to the mic.
Sure.
What was your name in that one again?
Ricky Boy.
Ricky Boy. If anyone hasn't seen on my YouTube channel, the Eternal Pin Tattoo School series, the cameo from the school's original founder, Ricky Boy, is something that needs to be seen for sure.
With the help of us, of course, you don't even need to know how to draw. You don't even have to get tattooed. I got covered in this garbage because I had to prove myself. Who does that anymore? Who's got time for that? I don't.
Explain to me your process while you were formulating the character Ricky Boy.
Oh, man, it took me a while to find my character for that because I wanted to kind of... You know, I wanted to be a little heavier, I wanted to kind of really get into the costume, but when it really boiled down to it, it was kind of just I'm not an actor. So I really wanted to come through and be a part of it, but I just had to find, there were so many lines to remember that I found that I had to kind of just be really comfortable in the character. It had to be something natural for me to do because it was almost too much to do this totally different character that I wasn't used to and remember all the lines and stuff as well. So it was different. It was fun. And I'm down here at 12 at night because it was the only place that I could it was quiet with no interruptions and stuff. So it was interesting.
Inside the actor's studio here at Temple.
Exactly.
Imagine if someone broke in.
Oh my
at
God.
That moment, and then they happened upon this scene because I could see in the reflection of your glasses your lines that were
exactly.
plastered in, like your poor man's teleprompter.
Totally, that's what it was. I think I had every chair and music stand or whatever we have, with all the little different pages taped up, and I was sitting right there. I'm sure as people watched at certain points because people walk by late at night.
Yeah,
what the hell's going on in there? I'm like.
Well, it's funny that that's your natural character, that's your alter ego if it came down to it.
It's my go-to. Yeah, Guido from New York. Last life.
The question that I'm dying to know is, if I were to give you $5 million right now, would you teach at my tattoo school in real life?
It's a good question. God, I would.
Or is there a
number?
Probably
think I would. You know, for $5 million, fuck, man, I would probably because
I don't think there's many people that wouldn't.
Yeah. I mean, I think about all the stuff I could do with that. I mean, I could keep 3 and give away 2 and do some good with it. You know what I mean? So yeah, I probably would.
What about 2 million?
2 million? Probably.
What about $700?
Never. It's something that I don't want to do.
Of course.
I mean, I could do it. I could open up a tattoo school,
mm-hmm.
but it's just something that I don't really agree with, and you try and do what's right in your life or, you want to live with yourself. So
yeah.
I would like to think that nobody would ever offer me $2 million and that I don't ever have to deal with that.
Right. Because what if you did it and then you were just a shitty teacher because you've never taught a tattoo school before?
Yeah, it's true.
Then they're out.
Yeah.
They're out of the money.
Well, I don't think being a good teacher is a prerequisite for being a teacher at a tattoo school.
No.
So I don't think that's important.
Right. Because if you're a good teacher, you teach something else.
Yeah, exactly.
Something more useful.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. You don't want to fuck up somebody's life.
Right. So you had some issues here semi-recently with a tattoo school trying to open. And I know it's been discussed to death, but to give some context for maybe some listeners that weren't along for that journey.
Yeah.
In a brief sense, what was that situation from your point of view?
Honestly, it totally caught us by surprise because we didn't know anything about it. I had just gone on a really super fun trip and tattooed in Varanasi with Robert Ryan and Dustin, my coworker. And, just gotten back from that. So I was feeling really groovy and shanti shanti and everything. And then all of a sudden, thank God, another tattooer here, Ian from Apex, had gotten a letter where they wanted to try and like buy his shop as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess he didn't take it, so it went somewhere else. And so he knew about it, you know? So he had started a small thread between me, Grimy, Mike, Owen, and I think that was all of us. I apologize if I'm forgetting one person, but it was just a little, you know, direct message like, hey, this is what's going on. And then weirdly, like the next day, I just happened to see, you know, those weird, you know, you take a little break and maybe you're just like eating something really quick during a break of a tattoo, you know, and I kind of like turned on my phone to like entertain myself for a few minutes and just sit there while I'm eating. And it was like, ART is taking over Oakland. You know, that was the post that came up wow. out of the, you know, hundreds of people that I follow or whatever.
Strong wording.
Yeah, very strong. And, you know, I just wrote to them like, weird. I didn't hear about that.
How do they expect that not to backfire?
Well, because that's what happens when you have people that aren't involved in tattooing, like marketing for a tattoo company, I guess is what you would call it. So, you know, I kind of wrote them back a pretty direct, you know, I try and be, you know, respectful and cool to people, but that I felt was a little weird. So, you know, I wrote them something back pretty direct and they took it down and it was like, okay, wow, they're making a move. So we actually like know what's happening. And we met the next day. The owner of that school got my number from a mutual friend. He wrote me, we went and had coffee. We had a very civil little meeting and we basically, you know, there's good and bad with everything. So to social media, that was really our only course of action. You know, like I talked to him and said, hey, you know, I'm sure you're probably already in contracts. You probably have a lease. So our only course of action is to try and decimate you on social media, which obviously can work these days.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, he understood and we shook hands and chips will fall where they may and went about our day and it went on. It just happened. You know, it just was like, boom, this is happening. This is like the week I'm home. And I was on my fucking phone from the time I dropped my kid off from school till like 2:30 in the morning. Cause it's like, you're typing, you're posting, you're getting messages. I had people from the school previously, like writing me what had happened to them, et cetera. So long story short,
you're like running the anti-tattoo school bunker.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, my wife was very supportive in the beginning. But of course, you know, by the third or fourth day, it was just like, get the fuck out of here. You know, just stay out of my way. Do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Let me know when it's over.
Yeah. She's starting to think, you know, the tattoo school's not so bad.
Exactly. Who cares?
Yeah.
Ironically, it was just a few blocks from where I live. You know, it's right around the corner from where I get coffee every morning.
Right. So you walk by it every day.
It was a very guttural response. It was just like, oh my God, you know, like I'm going to see these students when I'm getting coffee in the morning and they're going to want to show me their drawings. And, you know, I mean, good for them, but I just was like, no, you know.
Well, at least once they coughed up the 5 million, you'd be able to walk to work there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, just, you know, if they would have called me, it would have been different because, you know, maybe I would have.
Right. I guess it would be like the ultimate, like surrender for you to teach at that school, like not at your own school, but to teach at that school would be the ultimate surrender.
Yeah, totally.
And if they bought this shop and they're like, can we get some of this shit off the walls? Like we got some real art to put up.
Move that. Yeah. Oh my God. What a horror story.
So that is a pretty interesting example of how the internet has come to rescue in a sense.
Sure.
You know, cause it really, it did get an issue out in a very fast way where people were very passionate about it. And it actually got a result, I think, in a constructive way.
I think so, too. Yeah, that was, I think, the most positive, like, takeout from it was basically that Matt Decker, the owner of Premium, who I am friends with and totally dig now because we were never enemies. Like, we just didn't really know each other. Like, we ran in some of the same circles. His shop had been open for almost 10 years. And, you know, I never had an issue with it, of course, you know, and they were doing their thing, which is great. And then all of a sudden it was that, you know, and it was just like, what? So, you know, thank God, like he kind of took a step back and realized like, you know, this would be cool for a couple years maybe, but I'm like a long-term kind of thing with tattooing. So
how long have you been in Oakland for?
I've been in Oakland for 20 years.
Right. So there's no way that you're not going to feel like impeded on by something like that just rolling in.
Sure, sure, exactly. I mean, no way. And, you know, it's not, just to be clear for anyone that's listening or watching, it's not like, oh, you know, I'm so-and-so and this is fucking my town.
Right.
You know, it's not that at all. I mean, you know, we all share and it's a free country, you mm-hmm. know, and there's free will and all that. But, you know, like I said, this was just like a cathartic reaction to something that was heinous.
Yeah.
So, and you know, he kind of started thinking about it and we talked and our peaceful protest turned into a celebration of, you know, him realizing that he wanted to be a part of the tattoo community, which was awesome. You know, so I totally like embrace him in that decision.
And I feel like that's a result that isn't the norm these days, because usually a peaceful protest will not end peacefully. And it's not going to turn into a celebration.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that might be a testament to you specifically being the person to like spearhead it, because I feel like you emote a lot of positive energy that some people in that position might not. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Because if someone's like, fuck this school, we're going to fucking go out there and we're going to like be loud and be crazy and fucking spray paint the walls, then it's everyone's going to be like, hell yeah, let's do it. Because everyone wants an excuse to freak out.
Exactly. And then a couple of us would end up in jail and nothing would be accomplished.
Right. Then the tattoo school would open.
Exactly. Yeah. And we'd look like idiots.
Right.
You know, so it did have a really positive outcome, which was great.
Yeah. Generally speaking, do you think that more positive comes from social media or more negative?
That's a good question.
I'm sure there's a lot of different facets you can look at it in.
I mean, in a general sense, you know, probably more positive maybe, you know, I mean, I can say for me, I'm trying to find the positive. You know, I mean, I don't want to live pissed. I don't want to be angry at something I can't control. So I'm just trying to like find my way through all this, you know? So, I mean, you know, I've got like, God, just the last night I was showing my wife, I was looking for like a Blessed Mother reference and I just, boom, it was like every holy card I've ever collected in my life was right there. Plus like 10 more, you know? So it's neat that you have like all this reference, and I think it makes people better tattooers. I think that people are able to, I feel like I'm a tighter tattooer because I have like more reference or can see what other tattooers are doing. You know, I mean, some of the negatives quickly might be like other people are copying other people's stuff, or, you know, other people don't really have to draw. You don't really have to know how to draw, you know, but I mean, that's always been a part of tattooing. It's right. Just, you know, like everything else, it's just, you know. What do they call that? Exponentially growing, I guess.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's also that not only there's probably more people copying work, but we can just see that easier that they're copying the work.
Totally.
So
totally.
I think it's always going to be relative, you know, but it is exponentially growing for sure.
Exactly.
I didn't tattoo before all of the current technology, so it doesn't disturb me like it could disturb some other people. So it's always interesting for me to get the take on it. And some people seem to be more down about it while others embrace it a little bit more. And I think it's important to embrace it as much as possible because it's something that nobody can change.
Exactly.
Because it's the whole world.
Yeah.
You know, there's all the problems that come with it, but you gotta kind of take it as it goes. I feel like it's got to be harder to raise kids than to tattoo in the current.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We were just talking about that a little bit earlier. Yeah. The kid wants the iPad. Can I get your phone? It's difficult.
Yeah, I feel I don't have kids, but I see in restaurants, kids are just like on a tablet or on something. And
it can, off?
That's fine.
Okay.
This is a tattoo shop after all. The phone does ring.
Yes, it does. So I'll just let it ring next time.
It's all good.
They're going to call back, I'm sure.
Yeah. But it seems like tablets are like the new babysitter to kids because it will calm them down, but it's a slippery slope.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, once you go that route, there's no coming back.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, it becomes the babysitter and I'm sure the kid just like drops to the ground whining as soon as you take it from him, I would guess.
Yeah.
You know, I know because I've done it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty much how it works.
Yeah. Have you experienced any significant meltdowns?
He's never, you know, we have definitely like a no phones at the table. When we're eating, you know, there's never a phone out or anything like that. So when it comes to like dinner meals together, so I don't like, you know, let him have my phone at the restaurant or anything like that. But even him, like Sonny, my son, he'll like wake up early. You know, like he used to wake up and then maybe like, you know, jump in bed with me or whatever. And now it's like, I'm awake. My parents are asleep. Where's the iPad? Minecraft. So now it's like new things coming up that he's a little bit older, like where you can't watch the iPad until you've gotten dressed and brushed your teeth and made your bed. And then he's like kind of like watching it while he's getting dressed, but he's not really getting dressed, you know? So then you're like kind of battling for, to take it away and no, you know, so it's, you know, not constant, like minute to minute, hour to hour, but it's very consistent.
I'll even find myself doing similar things.
Sure.
Like trying to get dressed or brushing my teeth or washing the dishes. I'm like, oh, there's a windowsill right in front of my sink. This is perfect place to put my phone. And I can watch YouTube videos. And I can do all this stuff. And then I have a plate and I'm just like a zombie staring at the screen. And I'm like really scrubbing the pot real good, but it doesn't need it that much.
Yeah.
And my wife is like, what are you doing? And she always cooks dinner because she's an amazing cook. And then awesome. I always clean up. And that's just how we do it. And that's what works. But she's so impatient with how slow I am that not only will she cook, she will kick me out of the sink and take my job away from me.
Wow.
And finish the dishes. Some people might think that's a win, but I'm like, come on, that's my job. Like that's my duty. That's what I can contribute to this. And then you won't even let me do it.
Yeah. Whoever cooks, the other person should do the dishes.
Yeah, it's only fair, I think. And she'll say that she does most of the cleaning while she's cooking. So what I do is minimal anyway.
Sure.
But, you know. Being married, right? Am I right?
Yeah. Oh, most definitely. You know, I'll have to add to that my wife also is probably one of the most well-adjusted person I know to like technology and phones. Like she still uses her phone as a phone, mm-hmm. you know, she doesn't watch it. Of course she'll order some stuff and stuff like that. But, so, you know, when our house has like a big, huge basement. So when I'm upstairs, unless I'm alone in the house, I don't ever like have my phone on. But if I am by myself, I got to admit, you know, like I don't really watch a lot of TV, but I do watch my phone. Like I'll watch mm-hmm. news or stuff that I'm interested in. You know, I watch tons of shit on YouTube. So, you know, I'm sitting on the porch having a cigarette after dinner and I've got my phone like right up against my pack of cigarettes and I'm watching like whatever happened today or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
So it's something I have to like check myself on as well.
Yeah. It's hard because everything is available. And if you have a free moment, it's hard to not want to use it.
Yeah.
But sometimes you don't have to use it.
I can be entertained constantly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I feel like I'm trapped in that loop where I need to be entertained constantly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a slippery slope.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. This week's episode is sponsored by TatSoul. Find all of their products at tatsoul.com and other updates on Instagram at TatSoul. They just put out two new colorways of their shop furniture. You can get client chairs, artist chairs, armrests, and portable tables, not just in the black finish you've come to love, but now get them in oxblood and tobacco. Row. Show your customers how refined your tastes are with these slick new colorways. You're an individual, right? You like nice things, right? Your body will thank you when you treat it to a new artist chair, and your clients will truly appreciate the new oxblood and tobacco colorways when they come to after passing out from you tattooing their ass into oblivion. TatSoul is also offering free shipping on all of their furniture to customers in the contiguous United States. Sorry, Hawaii. See what all the fuss is about at TatSoul.com and make sure to tell them you heard about it on Books Closed. So in general, do you think that people give away too much on the internet about tattooing?
Definitely. Definitely.
And do you think a podcast like this is part of the problem? I'm trying to remain self-aware.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't think I've always been interested in tattooing. So any, you know, is it Ricky Boy? I'm like confused.
Yeah.
But Ricky Boy was me. Roy Boy. Yeah. That was just part of the culmination.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I love those Roy Boy videos from like the early 90s and the tattoo review, you know, obviously being a tattoo enthusiast, you know, anything that had the word tattoo on it. When I, you know, started or throughout my career, I was interested in, and well, what's that about? Or what are they going to show us? Or what can I learn from this? So I guess it's an extension of that, you know, so I don't think that it's bad to, you know, discuss tattooing or let people know about it or windows in or, you know, whatever the right term is. But I definitely see what seems to be some kind of disgruntled, you know, nobody would show me shit, so I'm going to show the world how to do it or whatever. You know, it's just, you know, and I don't, you know, I'm really conscious of like not being the guy that's like, you know, well, when I grew up or when I went to school, we were walking in our bare feet in the snow. And, you know, it's like that same old thing, you know, but I just am really conscious of there's things that you kind of earn and you get the information through doing certain things. And it doesn't have to be scrubbing toilets. It doesn't have to be working for free or the extortion of free labor and all this bullshit. But there's just certain things that you do. And I guess that, you know, it's like, what do they have those things on the internet, like crowdsourcing information and stuff. I guess, you know, it's just now it's just basically like, here it is and, you know, do what you can. You know, and that just seems to be the way it is these days. So just got to kind of roll with it, I guess.
And knowing all that, how much stuff is out there and the kind of stuff that's out there, the way that tattooing is shown, like maybe in regard specifically to the TV shows and stuff, do you think that if you are a younger person starting to maybe look to be interested in tattooing, whether that means tattooing yourself or just getting tattooed, like if you're 18 years old today, mm-hmm. do you think that the way tattooing is shown, it would still interest you the way that it did in your life?
I mean, I would think so. I would think so just because I just really love tattoos, you know? So I have, you know, I have no idea what it would be like to come into it now as a young adult. It's just, you know, it's night and day. It's just night and day. It's like kind of like everything else, you know, it's like, whether it's motorcycles or rock and roll, outlaw bikers, whatever it is, it's been kind of like packaged and sold to us, you know, so there's that element of it. But I still believe that it like holds the magic it always has. And I still do believe that they're truly special. So, you know, it's just kind of like what we were saying earlier. There's like, you know, good and bad aspect to everything, I would guess. So,
yeah, it's tough because I think a lot of people are initially attracted to tattooing now and they see like purple mohawks and steampunk people.
Sure.
Like driving their blimp to work and, sure. and all that stuff. I guess from an optimistic point of view, that's not a terrible thing in the sense that it's continuing to evolve tattooing and it's giving other people other options because not everyone is attracted to this, the things that I like or the things that you like.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think the perspectives could be different than when I started because it seems to me that in some of the presentations regarding tattoo, there's this whole lifestyle aspect. And that's one thing that I, you know, if I'm going to have an issue with something, that would be one of the things I would have an issue with. Because, you know, before tattooing was this completely obscure underground thing that you had to go figure out. Like I had to kind of leave my friends behind when I was 20 years old and I'm going to go search this thing out. And a couple of my friends like stayed with me like roommates and stuff and became friends with Erno and Sonny and people that I started tattooing with. And, you know, we're kind of in the family as well, but this was like something you had to go discover and you had to like pay your dues to even get to be able to hang out in that shop aside from getting tattooed, you know? So I definitely think that there's people I would assume that are basically like, oh, wow. Well, that looks cool. You mean I can like, you know, there, it's like this rock and roll pseudo jet set lifestyle of like, oh, I'm going to like run all over the world and I get to like wear cool clothes and have tats and make a shitload of money. And, mm-hmm. and that's just not really the case, you know?
Right. Right.
So, you know, I think there's definitely like some misrepresentation
yeah.
with that, you know, but there also are great parts of the job. As
sure.
well, you know?
Yeah. That's actually a really great way to look at it. At it is that people are being attracted now to the lifestyle over actual tattooing.
Exactly.
Yeah. yeah.
And that's what I would have a little bit of an issue with. It's kind of like, oh, I never would have actually even thought of tattooing, but it is like, seems like the next best thing to not working.
Right.
You know, it looks fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
whatever.
Easy and I can dress how I want.
Yeah.
And I can be how I want. And I can, you know, I could be crass and abrasive.
Yeah.
And
like, I just get to be an artist. It's
yeah.
like another aspect of getting to live this like artsy lifestyle.
Right.
Which
right.
you know, if you put in the work, that can be a part of it. You know, but I do see, you know, like since we're talking about it, I do see, you know, now that tattooing has become like more mainstream or opened up to like anyone, basically, which is, you know, it's cool in one aspect. But in another aspect, I see like just the problems that any, you know, like social demographic might have in tattooing because it's open to everyone. And mm-hmm. I don't mean like straight or male or female. Like there's always been straight male, female tattooers, you know, I mean, you know, just kind of like, let's just say normies, just to totally generalize, yeah. You know, like just super normies that, you know, maybe were like, oh, you know, I would go to art school because I like to draw, but you know, I'll become a tattooer, you know, and they would have never been able to survive through becoming a tattooer, you know, which I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but now it's completely open. You know, you have tattoo schools,
yeah,
for example, you know.
Well, it's interesting to think that I'll expose myself. I'm probably a normie, as you would describe, because mm-hmm. I was in school to be a music teacher. And then I started working at a shop, and now I'm a tattooer.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, I met the right people to point me in the right direction. But I could have just as easily gone a different way, because it wasn't immediately present for me to be on the path that I'm on now. So sometimes, you know, it can work out for people, but I feel like it's so heavily dependent on what your experiences are and what, you know, the people around you to kind of force you to stop being an idiot.
Completely. I mean, that's also kind of one of the beautiful things about it too.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, I don't know if it'd be like religion or something else like that, but it's kind of just like open and there, and whoever is interested can kind of find their way in it if they have like the passion for it. And that's something that's like really awesome, I think. You know, like if you truly love this, then you can succeed at it. You don't have to necessarily spend $150,000 to go to this university, or you don't have to like live in this country, or you don't have to be male or female, you know? So that's something that's really neat about it, you know? So that would be like a positive aspect, I would guess.
So after having tattooed as long as you have, what continues to keep you motivated? Cause it seems like you're just as on it as ever. You post new work all the time. It's always still getting cooler, getting better, and like new Thank ideas you. And new stuff.
I mean, being inspired by the people that I work around, and, you know, I do see a lot more tattoos than I used to see. And I've always been really blessed to be around like incredible tattooers. You know, I mean, like, you know, getting to work out here and working around, you know, Eddie Deutsch or Tim Lehigh or the guys that I work with right now, like everybody's super cool and really good. So that's inspiring. I think, you know, this might sound kind of weird, but I've definitely thought about it, knowing that like so many people are going to see your tattoo if you post it. Kind of makes you like keep your chops up and want to try harder. And like my coworker, you know, Dustin, he started using rotaries when he first started tattooing, and I didn't really have ever used those, and I didn't really know how to use them. And it took me a while, but like for the last year, I've been kind of trying like different machines and stuff like that. So, you know, it's an ebb and flow. You go through waves. I mean, I've definitely had a good 5 or 6 or 7 years where I like wasn't trying to get better, and I was just chugging along, or like keeping the shop open, or making sure everything was the way it needed to be, you know? So, it feels good to have people like respond to the fact that you still seem excited about tattoos. It feels good to be excited about tattoos. And I've always been excited about tattoos, but maybe I just didn't really know what to do with it, you know, or been a little lazy. Maybe at sometimes as well.
Had you ever hit a point that you really just felt like you had become so stagnant and you just decided from then on you wanted to get back on it?
Yeah, I mean, definitely there's been times. I mean, I've been tattooing 30 years, so that's most of my life because I'm 51. So I've been tattooing longer than not. So there's definitely been times where I was going through like personal stuff where, you know, tattooing was on the back burner. And that's just what I did for a living. And I'd show up and make it happen and split, you know? And I think becoming a father and needing to be like way more organized and efficient has kind of poured into tattooing. Because before I was a dad, I could just do whatever I wanted and fuck off. And, you know, it just depended on what was going on, you know? Now I kind of have to be responsible and efficient. So I guess maybe like, it's easier to bring into the shop with me when I come mm-hmm. to work.
Is there a level of like being a role model to your son that plays into it at all?
I don't know if it's in tattooing yet. I mean, as a human being, definitely, but you know, I wouldn't even know like what his perspective is on tattooing, you know, just wanting to maybe be like one of, you know, now I'm like an older guy. I used to be a young guy, you know, I was like one of the younger guys, and now I'm like one of the older guys. And that's cool. You know, maybe just wanting to, it's not like you're consciously like, oh, I'm on this mission to show people that you can be this way. I mean, that's not it. It's just maybe wanting to, you know, unconsciously lead by example. I don't know.
Yeah. It's like you almost end up in that position by hanging around so long.
Yeah.
Or people will put you in that position.
Yeah. That does happen. You know, and like I said earlier, it's like, I don't want to be grumpy. I want to be happy. So I just try and like, you know, keep it on the positive.
Is a lot of your clientele people that are like super stoked to get tattooed by you and they're seeking you out specifically? And or is it like a lot of neighborhood people too that'll still roll through?
Used to be mostly neighborhood people. I'd say, you know, 75% of the people I tattooed when I first opened were just neighborhood people. And every once in a while I tattoo somebody traveling. And now it seems to be the opposite. And once you get booked up, you know, like once you're like a full-blown adult and you have a kid and a shop and all that stuff, you kind of live by your calendar, your schedule. You know what I mean? It's like, I know I have to take my kid to school. I know at nights my wife works and I have to be at home. You know, I know when I have to be at the shop and be tattooing because somebody traveled here. So I have that obligation to like meet them and be present and do a good job. So definitely it's completely flipped, you know, and it is really, you know, I feel really lucky to tattoo people that are excited, you know, and stoked to get it. And, you know, not that you charge more, but just, you don't have to deal with like the haggling or how much is it going to be and all that stuff that you've done for decades. You know, it's nice to be able to just be like, this is what I'm charging now. And if you want to do it, I'm totally down. And it's great. You know, it's just great. You know, you're going to make your bills. You're not tripping on rent. It's a lot easier.
Yeah. In that situation, the money's almost just the side effect of the good experience
completely
that you can have from it.
Yeah.
And if you're having a good time, then they're definitely going to have a good time.
Yeah, I
usually
think so too. Yeah, and I mean it's a celebration, you know. It should be like a like an upswing kind of feeling as opposed to like, you know, a very mundane kind of vibe.
Yeah, I felt lucky that I've every person that I've seeked out to get tattooed by, it's always been a really positive experience and I always come out of it liking their work even more because it's 'cause you see more about them in their environment and it just seems if it seemed cool enough to want to get tattooed by them in the first place, then it's like way cooler even when you finally go in there.
Yeah.
Because the internet
I've experienced
can
that as well.
Yeah. The internet can only paint so much of a picture of someone. And sometimes people aren't what you expect them to be.
Sure.
But I'm glad that in my experience, it's usually in a positive way.
I mean, I remember getting tattooed by Bob Roberts back in the day and, you know, just hearing all these rumors about Big Bad Bob and, you know, how wild he was. I was a little nervous.
Yeah.
You know, and it was super cool, man.
Which makes it even more rewarding when it turns out well.
Yeah.
You know, because you
totally
get those nerves and then you're like relieved almost, but also super excited.
Completely.
Yeah. Do you have any other experiences getting tattooed by particular people that stand out?
You know, 4 out of 5 of them were pretty obvious. Awesome experiences. There's always those like weird ones. You know, definitely getting tattooed by Philip Liu was really amazing. Getting tattooed by Ed Hardy was really fucking cool. You know, like getting to work for Ed and, you know, getting, you know, like the employee discount. That was amazing. You know, I mean, back in the late 80s, you know, he's charging $200 an hour. That was like, you know, goddamn, how am I ever going to afford a tattoo? And I remember getting my girlfriend at the time had gotten like a settlement. And it was like Christmas or something. And instead of getting a present, I got a card with like $300 in it. And I was just like hour and a half, you know? So it's like, okay, I can get this tattoo started, you know? And that's what led us to like becoming friendly and working for him. And that opened up like a whole other world. So, you know, that stuff can be real magical.
Yeah. And that's like the true avenue to building those relationships with people. Whereas now it seems like someone will just hit you up on Instagram and be like, yo, you taking apprentices? I'm here. I'm ready.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, you need anyone to work with you? And they don't have any work on their profile. And it's like, well, what are you asking? Why are you sending me a DM to get a job? Like, where in the world otherwise does that work?
Is unfathomable to me. You know, that somebody would expect a job, like such an intimate job, and you've never even met them. Or like people come through and ask for an apprenticeship. And it's like, if I was going to spend 2 years with somebody, it would definitely need to be somebody that I knew I'd get along with.
Yeah.
You know? So it's not like we have to like see eye to eye on everything, but you're going to spend a lot of time with that person. So it's just a naivety, you know?
Yeah. I don't know what they expect it's going to be. I mean, they must just have no idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Like they can't even think to that point. They're just like, I need to get an apprenticeship and that's the only focus. They're not thinking what the reality will actually be. Because just asking anybody.
30 years ago, people would say, I want to start learning how to tattoo. What should I do? It's like, get tattooed. You know, it sounds so obvious, but, you know, that's the only way you're going to figure it out is by being around a tattoo shop. You're not going to figure it out on the internet. That's for sure. So, I mean, you might get some stuff on the internet, but you won't figure out how to make a living tattooing, you know? So it's interesting that people don't see that.
I got an email once from someone who was asking me for an apprenticeship, and he was an idiot just right off the bat because I had only been tattooing a few years anyway. So why would anyone want an apprenticeship from someone like me at that point? And he was almost pushy and like rude about it. Like,
bizarre,
like I'm right. ready. Like, when are you going to realize that you're going to give me an apprenticeship, motherfucker?
Right.
I was like, okay. Right. And normally I wouldn't respond to it, but I was so taken aback by it. And that was like really in the heart of when I was like learning my ethics of, you know, of how tattooing really should work and how you should feel about stuff like that. So it was probably right around the time where I really would have been like realizing that that's a crazy thing to do. And then it's almost offensive that someone's that pushy about it.
Sure.
Like they're owed something.
Yeah.
And so I just wrote him back just because I was too curious not to. And I said, I would only apprentice someone who had at least a back piece or both arms done by me. When in reality, I couldn't do a back piece then or a sleeve or anything.
Sure.
But it didn't matter because it wasn't rooted in reality. And he wrote back and said, well, who's to say I even want to get tattooed by you? I was like, what?
I mean, how hilarious is that?
It's like a Seinfeld episode.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous, obviously.
But really, I mean, maybe he had good taste because I wouldn't want to have been tattooed by me then either.
But still a weird approach.
Yeah.
Definitely a weird approach.
It's crazy.
I mean, there's definitely an epidemic and always has been of people who've probably been tattooing less than 5 years. My friend Sonny Tufts used to call them tattoo pukes. A tattoo puke is somebody who's been like tattooing for like 3 or 4 years and they start believing what the customers tell them.
Ooh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that gets dangerous.
Like, oh, I'm the shit. You know, like, wow, look how good I am. You know,
I'm so good they give me extra money.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I've seen people, they don't want to pay for somebody to answer the phone. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, if you're busy enough and you want to run a shop efficiently, you might need somebody to help while you're working. You know, I used to answer the phone, you know, while I was tattooing, which sounds crazy now, but it was normal 20 years ago. And I've just, there's certain shops in this area that, you know, I know of like 12 people that they've, you know, like, okay, instead of paying somebody to answer my phone, I'll just apprentice you for about a year. And then the people go into it not even wanting to work with those people. It's just like an in. And then they get their, you know, I don't say get their chops up, but they figure out what's going on. And then they bounce somewhere else.
Well, they look at it the same way that anyone coming out of college is like, okay, I got to get a job in the mailroom. And then I'm on. Then I'm going to be CEO
exactly.
in a few years.
Yeah.
And
which,
it just doesn't. It doesn't
work.
I mean, it works, but it doesn't work at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it works as far as like they get their foot in the door, but is it like what, I guess, someone that really wants like the real experience, you know, we could talk about what that would be, but, you know, like a proper experience maybe is a better word. You know, that's not how you're going to get it.
And I feel like it spawns a whole chain of events where if someone learns like that and then they don't give a fuck about the person, they screw them over and then open up down the street, then chances are they're going to have their own apprentice in a couple of years.
Of course.
Who will do the same thing and then open up again. And it's just now the whole town is just fully saturated by people that are like 2 year tattooers that all have private studios that turn into walk-in shops that
exactly.
turn into whatever.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I've taught one person how to tattoo in 30 years.
And who is that?
Dustin Wengren sitting right over there.
Right. And if for you, has that been a rewarding experience because it was a more genuine relationship?
Totally.
I mean, I know the answer. On
Yeah, of course. I mean, he works here.
Right.
You know, and I hope he works here forever. You know, obviously that probably won't be the case, but, you know, it's been wonderful. And it's the kind of thing where, you know, I tried to teach one other person how to tattoo when I first opened. You know, it was like, okay, I'd been tattooing more than 10 years. And now I have my own place. And I was, you know, somebody kind of was around that was like, you know, just broken up with their girlfriend. They could draw amazingly, all that stuff that seemed to work out really well. And it didn't really happen. And so I realized like, okay, you know, I need to look for like certain qualities in a person that, you know, like integrity is super important and things like that aside from skills, you know, which is obviously a part of it. So, you know, I feel really fortunate to have met somebody like that. And, you know, I wanted to pass it off to at least one other person during the time I had been tattooing because somebody did it for me, mm-hmm. you know, and I feel like that's what you're supposed to do. But yeah, I'm not interested in just, you know, spawning tattooers so they can all stand around and tell me how awesome I am all day long.
Well, I guess I'll just delete that email I was going to write you about learning. With a long and illustrious career, you must have an anecdote to leave us with.
An anecdote? I don't even know what that word means.
I don't either. I hear people say it into microphones when talking to other people, and it just,
I think I know it.
It felt right.
What, like a crazy story or something like that? Or like, yeah. What do you want to hear?
Yeah. Nothing too incriminating.
Okay. Well, the one that kind of pops out in my head is, it's from a long, long time ago, and I was tattooing at Erno's in the Lower Haight. And I was tattooing with Sailor Cam, Greg Culls, Sonny Tufts, Dan Higgs would jump in and out of there, and Erno owned the place, but he never tattooed. And these kids came in and they said, well, hey, we've been partying at this old mortician school over on Post Street, and there's like some human skin there. You know, and I'd probably been tattooing like not quite 2 years, you know, maybe a year and a half, something like that. So I immediately thought like, you know, Dr. Frankenstein with these glass jars and stainless steel tops with human skin labels on them. So we just were like, oh, we got to go get it, you know. And so we went there later that night. We jumped in through a window. Greg and I went. Sonny went, but he was too scared to go in. And we went through the whole place. And it was interesting because it was, you know, probably like a little pre-turn of the last century building, you know, like late 1800s. They had that really cool room with the stairs that go up in like a half circle and the slab where the bodies were on. And you could tell that like teenagers and stuff were partying there. And there was, you know, like some witchy kind of spells going down here and there. You'd see weird little keys and like burnt stuff with some bones and shit. It was pretty interesting. And we didn't find the skin and we were a little disappointed. It was fun. We were a little disappointed. And right
as we were promised skin.
Yeah, exactly. I heard there was skin here. And right as we were leaving, we saw like a weird kind of closet area next to the lab. And there was these, white 5-gallon galvanized buckets. And there was a few of them. So, you know, we opened the bucket and it looked like chicken because the parts that had hit the air got kind of shrivelly and weird. And there was that kind of initial denial, disbelief thing going on. Like, no, that's not what that is. So I
it's
pulled
like
out
you wanted
glove.
To find it so bad. And then when you find it, you're like, yeah, oh, yeah, shit.
Exactly. I put on a glove and grabbed a piece and it was like, you know, a part of an ear in the chin area. So, you know, we were like, oh, no, that's human skin. All right. So we grabbed the bucket and we took it to, I think it was late at night. So the next morning we took it over to Greg Cull's apartment and he had a couple of roommates that were not too happy about this. It just freaked him out. And so we took it on, you know, we're like, we're on the porch. We're not in the house with it, you know? So we basically like took the skin out. There was a piece of arm and we kind of nailed it to a board, did a bunch of tattoos on it, and then cut it up and put it into these little like glass jars with formaldehyde. And right after that, I think the next month was like the 89 Arlington Tattoo Convention. So, you know, being young and struggling, you know, it was like just to get there and have a hotel room was amazing, you know. And so we made it there and we had thought like, wow, we could maybe sell these, you know, like we each have like 3 or 4 of them. And, you know, we were trying to sell them for like $100 a piece. And I did sell a couple. And then I remember like trading Jonathan Shaw some like super cheap Robert Williams posters for some of them. And, you know, I was just stoked that he wanted one. And the funny part about the story though is years later, I was watching an interview with Robert Williams and he was talking about how this guy wanted to get a back piece of his artwork, but couldn't afford the painting and getting the back piece by Ed Hardy. So he went to Robert Williams and was like, hey, I'll give you my skin, you know, if you do this artwork for me to get this back piece, et cetera. And I don't even know if that's really legal. I don't think you can really will your skin to somebody, but you know, it was an interesting story and it was on some kind of, you know, underground weird video or something, like not Mondo New York, but something like that. And he was saying how he really liked the idea of having the tattoo, but he realized that the guy was going to be a lot older and might outlive him. And then he holds up this little jar with this like skull and crossbones on it. And he starts to proceed to say how he has this like old pirate tattoo that he, you know, was carved off this old merchant sailor that he bought off of Jonathan Shaw, yada, 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 you know, and I'm watching it and I'm just like, hey, I did that tattoo, you know? So I think I saw him at an art show a couple years later, you know, and I was like, hey, just so you know,
I'm that pirate motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and he made a funny comment. He laughed. He's like, I believe half the shit that comes out of his mouth or whatever it was, you know. But
that's amazing.
We had a good laugh about it, you know.
I wonder where those are, the jars are all at now.
I wonder too. Yeah, I didn't keep any, which is strange. You know, normally, like, I have a little collection of stuff. I'm surprised that I didn't keep any.
Yeah.
You know. I think there was a certain time where I was like wondering if it was like karmically okay to have it and all this other shit, you know.
Or you just thought that you were going to be coming into some more skin in the future and you could stock up again.
Well, that was easy to get. I can get more.
Yeah.
I hate to think of how that would go down now.
Right. Yeah. Imagine if you were to find a bucket of skin today and it's just like on your Instagram story. You're like, well, it's in here, I think. People would lose their fucking minds.
Oh, they'd lose. I'm sure I'd get arrested probably.
Probably.
You know,
yeah.
Like some cartel chop ups or something like that.
Or yeah, if you framed it and it's like hashtag healed and
hashtag human skin.
Yeah, yeah.
Hashtag did it myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you have to, when the shit hits the fan, you got to pretend that it's actually fake.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, I actually like bought this pig skin.
Yeah.
I could have sold some of it to that tattoo school to use, I bet.
Ah, yeah, yeah. And then it's like a sting operation. Then you call the cops on him and they walk in. All the kids are like handling all these pieces of skin from a bucket.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The anonymous call.
Yeah. That'd make like a great plot for like a coming of age teen movie where it's set in a tattoo school. Which I guess is what I was trying to make, but without the budget for real buckets of skin, you can only go so far.
Yeah. If we only had smartphones back then, I can only imagine where it would have gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably wouldn't have gone well. There's probably a lot of things that happened back before smartphones that people could get away with.
Oh my God. Tons of stuff.
To come full circle back to our original topic.
Full circle.
What do you think the future holds for tattooing in connection to how social media and stuff has changed?
You know, I mean, honestly, I would have to say that I don't think any of us have any idea. You know, I know that there's a big push for like computers to be able to do tattoos, you know, and thank God.
Have you seen
those
videos of the guy putting his arm in the machine?
Yeah, exactly. I have. And the only, you know, thank God, it's like, yes, if you just wanted a tattoo on your forearm and they could strap your arm down and do the 3D printing but tattooing thing, you know, I'm sure they could eventually figure that out. But thank God there's like little nuances of needing to stretch and hold the skin and move the body. And,
I don't know how a machine could ever do it because there's just so much you have to, so much information that we're taking in at, you know, just from feel.
Yeah.
And I guess you could teach a machine.
Well,
anything.
I think once we hit that like Blade Runner stage of like total AI clones or whatever, where like a robotical hand can work as good as our hands, then maybe, you know, maybe, but that's got to be, you know, 50 years and I'll be dead by then. So I'm not really tripping on it too much. That is one thing that I will say is when it's come into this age of technology, you know, there's things that are like wonderful and incredible about it. And then there's things that are really scary about it. But I usually think to myself, like, you know, I've got a good 10 years or so left. So fortunately for me, I don't have to worry about that so much because I'm on like, you know, the downside of my career. You know, and I don't have to like worry about how it's going to change tattooing so much, which is kind of nice.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, you can just enjoy the moment, I guess.
Yeah.
I've been thinking, trying to figure out a way to make a video to spoof the machine tattoo. Because I just figured that, how could that not go haywire? So you have someone sticking their arm in the machine and everything's all good and it's like inspirational music and stuff. And then like cut in with interview footage about how this person who gets it put so much value in technology and they love to see how this new stuff can now affect tattooing or whatever. And they're in it and it's going well at first, but then soon enough, it's just like completely ripping through his arm. And
I'm sure you can do something like really clever. Yeah. You're going to have to get into like special effects a little bit for this one.
All right. Well, I think that will do it for this week. So I do want to thank you again for sitting down with me today and doing this. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you so much for coming to Temple and including me. I really appreciate it.
Of course. You were at the top of my list of people when I came up with this idea. Mostly because I knew I could convince you to do it.
Exactly. Because you got me to do that other crazy thing, so this will be easy.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I figured if you hung in there with that
and totally.
Spent like an entire day trying to figure out how to get the video onto my Dropbox account and everything. So if you hung in there with me for that, I figured this should be a lot easier.
Dude, I will tell you that there was a little time where I almost bailed. Like, I didn't want to bail. Yeah. You know what I mean? I really wanted to do it because I love what you do. And, you know, it was just difficult. And I'm glad I pushed through it.
Me too.
I'm glad Ricky Boy came to fruition.
Ricky Boy lives. Because without Ricky Boy, what do we have?
Well, you wouldn't have Eternal Pen, that's for sure.
No. Exactly. Another big thank you to Tatsoul for sponsoring this episode and to our guest, Freddie Corbin. Follow Freddie on Instagram at Freddie Corbin Tattoos and go get tattooed by him at Temple Tattoo in Oakland, California. You should definitely not follow me on Instagram at Andrew Storts because I am sure that you cannot handle what I just posted on there. Find additional info, videos, links, and more about this show on our website, booksclosedpodcast.com. Keep the messages coming to our voicemail line, 857-444-0662. Next week, you'll start to hear some of those messages, so get your questions and comments in now. If you're enjoying this podcast, please leave a rating and review on iTunes or wherever you're listening from. All you have to do is tap those 5 stars, and it really helps out the show. We are jamming and grooving over here, and we will be back next week to do it all over again. See you then.